3. My conscious life started with the outbreak of the Great War. It found me, like most Europeans, on my summer vacation. Indeed, the worst thing the war did to me was to spoil that vacation. With what merciful suddenness the last war began, compared with the slow, tortured approach of the one that is now imminent. On August 1, 1914, we had just decided not to take the matter very seriously, and to continue our vacation. We were on a farm estate in eastern Pomerania, lost to the world, in the midst of woods that I, as a small boy, knew and loved like nothing else in the world. The return from those woods to town, which usually took place in the middle of August, was the saddest and most unbearable event of the year for me, comparable perhaps only to the dismantling and burning of the Christmas tree after the New Year. On August 1, that return was still 2 weeks away. A few days earlier, some disquieting things had happened. The newspaper contained something never seen before. Headlines. My father read it longer than usual, looked very worried, and cursed the Austrians when he put it down. On one occasion, the headline was, "War." I kept hearing new words that I did not understand, but which were soon to be explained by events: ultimatum, mobilization, alliance, entente. A major who was staying on the same estate and with whose daughters I was on terms of teasing conflict suddenly received an order, another of those new words, and departed precipitately. One of our host's sons was also called up. As he drove off to the station in a gig, we all ran after him, shouting, "Be brave! Take care of yourself! Come back soon!" Someone called, "Thrash the Serbs!" And I, remembering what my father had said after reading the newspaper, shouted, "And the Austrians?" And I was very surprised when everyone burst out laughing. It made a far deeper impression on me to hear that the best horses on the estate, Hanne and Vachtod, were being taken away because, what a quantity of words to be explained, they belonged to the cavalry reserve. I loved each and every horse on the estate, and the fact that two of the finest were suddenly leaving was a great blow. Most depressing of all was hearing the word "return" every now and then. "Perhaps we shall have to return tomorrow." That sounded to me exactly as if someone had said, "Perhaps we shall die tomorrow." Tomorrow! And not after an eternity of 2 weeks! In those days there was no wireless, of course, and the papers arrived in our woods with 24 hours' delay. They also contained far less than nowadays. The diplomats were much more discreet. So it came about that, on August 1, 1914, we decided that there was not going to be a war, and that we were going to stay put. I shall never forget that August 1. The memory of that day will always instill in me a profound feeling of calm, of suspense resolved, of all's well again. It was a Saturday, with all the wonderful stillness that a Saturday produces in the country. The day's work was done. Bells of cattle returning home tinkled through the air. Peace and quiet reigned over the entire farm. The farm hands and girls were in their rooms scrubbing themselves for an evening dance. Downstairs, in the hall, with its hunting trophies on the walls and a row of pewter jugs and bright earthenware plates ranged along a high shelf, I found my father and our host, the owner of the estate, seated in deep armchairs, solemnly and weightily discussing the situation. Of course, I did not understand much of what they were saying, and I can recall no details, but I have not forgotten how calm and consoling their voices sounded. My father's higher tones against the deep bass of our host. How reassuring the sight of their leisurely manner was, the fragrant smoke of their cigars rising above them in slender columns, and how, the longer they talked, the clearer, the better, and the more comforting everything became. Until, finally, it was irrefutably clear that war was quite impossible, and therefore we would not let panic chase us back to town. Instead, as in all previous years, we would stay on to the end of the holidays. Having listened this far, I walked outside, my heart swelling with relief, contentment, and gratitude, and gazed with feelings almost of piety at the sun setting over the woods which had been returned to me. The day had been cloudy, but it cleared toward evening, and the sun, ruddy and gold, floated in the sheerest blue, promising a cloudless new day. Cloudless as, I was sure, would be the entire 14-day eternity of that vacation, which again lay before me. When I was awakened next morning, packing was in full swing. At first I did not understand what had happened. The word mobilization, which they had sought to explain a few days previously, conveyed nothing to me. Anyhow, there was little time to explain anything. We had to clear out, bag and baggage, that very afternoon. It was doubtful if a train would be available any later. "Today," said our efficient maid, "everything's 0.5. The meaning of this expression remains obscure to me. It seemed to signify that everything was topsy-turvy and it was a matter of each for himself. Because of that, I was able to steal away to the woods unnoticed. There they found me only just before we were due to depart, sitting on a tree stump, my head buried in my hands, weeping inconsolably, and quite unresponsive to the explanation that there was a war on and everyone had to make sacrifices. Somehow they managed to tuck me into the carriage and off we went, drawn at a trot by two brown horses, not Hanne and Wachtel, they were long gone, with clouds of dust rising behind and enveloping everything. I never saw my childhood woods again. That was the only time I experienced an aspect of the war as reality, and I felt the natural pain of one from whom something is snatched and destroyed. On the journey itself, things already began to change. They became more exciting, more adventurous, more glorious. The journey by train lasted 12 hours instead of the usual 7. There were constant stops, and each time a train full of soldiers passed us, everyone rushed to the windows, boisterously shouting and waving. Instead of a compartment to ourselves, as had been usual when we travelled, we stood in the corridors, or sat on our bags, tightly squeezed in the crowd, who talked and chattered incessantly as though they were not strangers but old acquaintances. They talked mostly of spies. During the journey I learned all about that romantic trade, which I'd never heard of before. We crossed every bridge very slowly, and each time this gave me a pleasantly creepy sensation. Perhaps a spy had left a bomb underneath. It was midnight when we arrived in Berlin. I had never in my life been up so late. The house was not ready for us, the furniture still buried under dust sheets and the beds rolled up. They put me to bed on a sofa in my father's tobacco-scented study. War certainly had its pleasurable side after all.